Let me tell you what I see in the stories of Jesus. So as I read the Gospels, I see the figure of Jesus presenting a radically new idea about the role and place of women in the church and in his new kingdom and in society. So we see, of course, Jesus speaking to the woman at the well, breaking numerous social conventions. We see him being merciful to the women caught in adultery. So from John 8, that what hasn't just been mentioned. When they brought just the woman to Jesus to be stoned. The man, they'd just forgotten about him. They didn't care about him. But they brought the woman to be stoned. The easy target, if you like. But Jesus, of course, has compassion and lets her go. We see Jesus including women as his disciples. It was women who surrounded him and provided material support for him and his followers and his mission. We see them being the ones who followed him right to the cross, whilst Peter and others abandoned him. We see Jesus appearing first of all, after his resurrection, to women, even though their testimony was not considered valid. At that point in time, still they became the first missionaries, the first witnesses to his resurrection. So the position of women was radically altered by Jesus. More specifically, though, we can see the Jesus filter that we've been talking about in previous weeks coming together as we think about Jesus and his encounters with women. So we see the priorities where Jesus focuses and includes victims, focuses on the outcast. We see the priorities around peace, around life and love come together in Jesus' encounters with women. First of all, in the Roman Empire, women and children were the victims and the oppressed. But in Jesus, we see something different. We see Jesus standing beside women, standing with the victims of an unjust society. We see that in the story of the woman caught in adultery. We see it in the story of the widow's offering. We see it in the story of Mary pouring perfume on him and not being pushed aside, standing with the victims and oppressed of society. We also see him building a community of peace, that second priority around this Jesus filter, where all were welcomed as equals, where the old categories of race and gender and social status simply didn't matter anymore. He crosses those social barriers in talking to the Samaritan at the well, in healing the daughter of the Syrophoenician woman, in simply letting women be part of his followers, part of his entourage. And finally, the third part of this Jesus filter that we've talked about, we see Jesus seeking to offer life and love to all in abundance, not restricting it to a few, to people in certain positions with certain power or social status or of a certain gender, but enabling all to flourish and fulfill their calling within this new kingdom. Now, that is really unusual. In his context, only men became followers of rabbis. And yet here, we have women also being invited to be followers of this rabbi, followers of this very different, strange rabbi, ushering in this new kingdom. Of course, we see that most of all when women become the first evangelists, the first witnesses to the resurrection. So there, in all of those encounters, we see the Jesus filter coming together. These priorities we see in Jesus of focusing on the victim, of building communities of peace, and a drive towards life and love. In some other parts of the New Testament, we see this radical new agenda being pursued as well. You could say that the first apostles put this Jesus filter on over their eyes and began to think about what the church might look like through this Jesus filter. So quite radically, we meet Phoebe. We meet Phoebe, a church leader. Good morning. Do you join us? We meet Priscilla, the wife of Aquila, who together were regarded as Paul's fellow workers. We meet Junius, who was seen as an apostle. And we also hear some theological reflection on the stories of Jesus, some reflection on what this Jesus filter might mean for the church. And so we hear in Galatians 3:28, you might know this verse, that there is no longer Jew or Gentile, slave or free, male or female, but all are one in Christ. So in that verse, we see the radical equality that Jesus sets up in his new kingdom, being brought to bear on the thinking of the early church. Paul was thinking, what does the church look like through this Jesus filter? Thinking through Jesus, what should the church look like? However, as many of you will be aware, the New Testament is a bit of a mixed bag when it comes to what it says about the place and role of women. Some parts of our New Testament library pursue what we see in Jesus. They try to work out what it might mean for this Jesus filter to influence how the church looks. But there are other voices present in the New Testament as well. And I hope that doesn't come as any surprise to us, having been on this journey together, understanding that this our sacred scriptures are a library with many voices being heard coming through the pages. So there are other voices as well, conservative voices, if you like, which maintain the cultural mores of the day. So we see and hear Paul talking about this idea that we have no other custom in the church. Therefore, for example, it's right for women to remain silent. That's just what happens everywhere. Or from 1 Corinthians 11, he says that women should have long hair. And he just says, well, that's just the order of things. That's just natural, isn't it? It's just obvious, isn't it? He's just kind of taking what's accepted within his own society, within his culture, and putting that onto the church. So those voices present a vision for the church which doesn't seem to have been so impacted by the Jesus filter, which don't seem to have realised that Jesus presents a radical new way of thinking when it comes to the place and role of women. These voices just echo the noise around them, echo the society around them, offering conservative positions which actually are explicitly trying to just fit in with the contemporary culture. Paul makes it quite clear. He says, well, we should do this because that means we will be respected by outsiders. Outsiders won't think we're too odd and strange and unusual. This is just the way of things in the world. This is just what makes sense best. A conservative voice echoing what was going on in culture. So, to summarise, so far, we've thought about the stories we have in our Gospels, where Jesus encounters women, and in them we see the priorities of the Jesus filter come together. We have seen this Jesus filter impact then some of the thinking in the early church. Like some of the apostles put this Jesus filter on and thought, what might that mean for how the church should look? We see that in some of the New Testament. But in other parts of the New Testament, we hear other voices which create dissonance with what we see and hear in Jesus. So we are left then to consider these dissonant voices, not just in the New Testament, but also in the Old Testament as well. So we've started with Jesus. That's where we always have to start our reading from. We then put this Jesus filter on. We read the rest of the pages through him. We try and read the rest of the Bible, trying to find the word within the word, trying to find God's voice in all of these voices. We read the rest of the Bible through Jesus. And that's what we're going to try and do now, particularly looking at some tricky passages around women and think about what might it mean to find God's voice in these texts. What might it mean to read these texts through the Jesus filter? And I'm going to suggest three ways of doing that, and then I'm going to hand over to you guys to have a go at doing it in practice. So, three ways of trying to read all of our texts in our great library through the Jesus filter. First of all, I want to suggest that some texts act like a mirror for ourselves, for the church, and for our society. Okay? So we need to face up, first of all, we need to be honest about the fact that in our sacred library, there are many texts that reveal the inferiority, subordination, and abuse of women in ancient Israel and in the early church. We have to own that. We have to be honest about that, that is true for a lot of our sacred library. But accepting that, we can then begin to use the texts as a mirror, asking questions about ourselves, our church, and our society. We might read a story in the Old Testament that is hard to stomach, a story where women are victimized and oppressed. Our first reaction to that story might be to think, thank goodness we are no longer like that. Thank goodness we've seen the light and we don't do things like that anymore. But then perhaps we hear the voice of God speaking to us, saying, are you sure? Are you sure that you, the church, the society, have actually moved on? Could it be that you are much more like this ancient patriarchal society than you thought? One text that seems to oppress women could hold a mirror up to us, force us to look carefully at our own society, church, or lives, and think, actually, maybe we're just like this. Maybe we're no different. I want to break that down and think about how that might happen for society, for the church, and for ourselves. So, we might read a text which seems to oppress women and holds a mirror up to our society. We might read it and hear God speaking to us maybe about how rife domestic abuse against women still is, or speaking to us about the fact that globally, 1 in 4 women have been sexually harassed at some point in their life. We might end up thinking about the everyday sexism campaign in this country that you might have heard about, and begin to see just how embedded this kind of sexism is in our society and in some of our scriptures. So an ancient text that seems to oppress women suddenly helps hold a mirror up to us and our society, helps us to see our society in a new light under the judgment of God. Another text might help us consider the state of the church. We might, for example, read a text which suggests the most important thing for women is childbearing. That is true for a number of texts, particularly in the Old Testament. Our first reaction after reading such a text might be to thank God that because of Jesus, we now know that what matters most is being children of God. What matters most is spiritual birth, not natural birth. And that would be a good and fair response to that text. But we might also be led by the Spirit to consider the idolization of family in the modern church. The Spirit might open our eyes to see that often in churches, it's those with a perfect family, those with 2.4 children, that are the ones leading at the center of things, whilst others that don't fit that pattern are sometimes pushed to the fringe. Now, I hope and pray that doesn't happen in this church, but I know for a fact that that is a trend, and that in some churches, the family, the nuclear family, is idolized. We might read a text, in particularly the Old Testament, which sees the most important thing for children as childbearing, which holds a mirror up and forces us to see clearly the own problems of our church today. We might also perhaps read a text which suggests women should return to an abusive relationship. There are again a number of texts which suggest that in the Old Testament and New Testament. And then be led by the Spirit to consider how the church has been and often is complicit in keeping women in situations of abuse. The text might judge us, might hold a mirror up to us to see the issues and problems with our own church. It forces us to take a good, long, hard look at ourselves and see our own church practices reflected in the text. Practices which might be in dire need of being overhauled. So that's the text holding a mirror up for the society, for the church, and also it might hold a mirror up for ourselves as individuals. It might make us consider our own attitudes and behaviours. We might, for example, read a text that screams of patriarchy, that dismisses women as nothing more than the property of men. And then perhaps, at least perhaps, I as a man need to hold a mirror up and ask to what extent I emulate these attitudes. We might think we have moved on, but have we? The text then can act like as a mirror for society, for the church, for ourselves. And the key word here is always repentance. We see our own practices, our own shortcomings, our own failures in the text. We are judged by the text, if you like, and are called to change, forced to change our practice. So that's the first way, I think, these tricky texts, these difficult texts, which jar with the Jesus filter, which jar with what we see in Jesus, can be read, finding God's voice in them. The second two ways that I want to suggest are much shorter. So second, it might be, and this is a much more positive way of looking at a text, it might be that some texts have voices that foreshadow Jesus and the radical equality that we see in his new kingdom. So it might be that one text disrupts the standard patriarchy of the Old Testament. We might hear a whisper that reveals Jesus to us, a voice that challenges the sexism we find elsewhere. It might be even that embedded in a text that is full of patriarchy, that's loudest voice, if you like, is oppression and victimization. We might even within that text find something positive. For example, we might come across a law which, whilst taking patriarchy for granted, whilst maybe even assuming that a wife is the property of a husband, it actually provides protection for women within that context. Protection for women who might otherwise be even more vulnerable in that context. So hidden then, within that text, which might assume oppression, victimization even, there might also be a faint voice that begins to speak to Jesus and his new kingdom, that points us forward to the Jesus who is always standing with the victims and the outcasts and the oppressed of society. We should be listening out for those voices. What can we see that's positive in the text, if you like? What points forward to what we see in Jesus Christ? So one, a text might act as a mirror. And that's, if you like, a more negative way of looking at the text. We see oppression and victimization in the text, and we hold a mirror up to our own lives, our own society, as we see that still, what we see in the text is still happening today. More positively, a text might foreshadow Jesus and the radical equality that we see in him. And thirdly, it might be that a text resonates with someone's story today. Perhaps someone reads the story of Hagar. So Hagar, if you don't know, was Sarah's slave. Abraham and Sarah, from the book of Genesis, they promised a son. It doesn't happen straight away. Abraham then goes and has sex with Sarah's slave Hagar to produce a son. She has a son, Ishmael, and then Sarah hates Hagar and Ishmael and sends her away into the wilderness. That story, a story of being cast out, a story of feeling rejected even by God himself, a story of everything going wrong, with no happy ending to speak of. Hagar just disappears from the pages of Scripture. There is no happy ending to her story. Someone might read that story and see themselves in it. It might give them the words to begin speaking of their own experience. It might enable them to know that they are not alone, that others have felt similar things, have gone through similar situations. Stories in the Bible of oppression and victimization might help people to begin to process, help give them the words to think through what they themselves have gone through. So that's three ways that I think we can hear God's voice in these tricky voices. Find the word within the words. Hear God speaking to us, even in these tricky texts. Three ways of reading tricky texts through the Jesus filter, through Jesus. Seeing texts as a mirror for our society, our church, and ourselves. Hearing in the text, more positively, that whisper that foreshadows Jesus. And thirdly, perhaps for some people, finding their own story in the text, a way to process and talk about their own story. Three possible ways of hearing God's voice in these tricky texts. Reading these texts through Jesus. Now it's your turn to have a go at putting some of this in practice by looking at some tricky texts within our sacred library.